Extra Life was born, it just occurred to me that gamers should be able to do the things they love to help sick and injured kids as well. And so the funds that Extra Lifers raise can go to a variety of purposes in the local area at the local hospital.
So maybe your extra $20 or your extra $50 goes to curing 87% of children with leukemia.
62 kids like me enter a children's hospital every minute.
And I was one of those kids. You could save their life too.
Play games, heal kids.
Hey, Justin, you want to watch a movie?
Yeah, sure. What you got?
What do you think about,
No, I saw it last week.
Oh, what about,
Not again.
Oh. How about this?
Wait. You want me to watch what?
So what did you think of Vertigo?
I sometimes forget how dark Hitchcock can be.
Yeah. That is a true fact.
I mean, I haven't seen many of his movies. My real experience with him has been the TV show, which had to adhere
right.
to a specific set of standards in terms of how far you can go in one direction or another. Man. Not to say I didn't enjoy it. I did.
Mm-hmm.
But man.
Yes. So for those of you who didn't read the title or the first sentence here, we watched Vertigo, the 1958 Hitchcock, you know, mystery?
Yes.
I guess it's, yeah, it's a mystery.
Yes.
Suspenseful mystery. And so to give you, you know, the page-long synopsis. We begin our story with a heroic chase across the rooftops. The crook makes it. The first cop makes it. Jimmy Stewart, he doesn't make it.
No.
Instead, he hangs from the gutter and falls prey to high anxiety. I mean, Vertigo.
Wrong movie.
Yeah, the other one. The panic freezes him, and when the first cop tries to come to his rescue, the cop slips and falls to his death. By the way, first use of the dolly zoom.
Nice.
There is a scene later on where they use that, they had to do it vertically because they did most of them just horizontally. Mm-hmm. And the technology didn't exist to do it vertically. That one shot that lasts like 2 seconds cost $19,000
in 1958. That's in 1958 money. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money in 2021 money, but still.
That's true. So anyway, cut to some time later and Jimmy's leaving the police force. This vertigo that he has is going to make it impossible for him to continue working. Luckily, he's rich. How convenient.
Yes.
And even trying to beat this acrophobia in stages by like standing on a step stool in his ex-fiance's home leads to him having a spell and falling.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So he's contacted. So Jimmy's character's name is John. Most people call him Scotty.
Yes.
You know, and he's contacted by an old friend from college. And this friend wants Scotty to follow the friend's wife, Madeline, around. I think my wife's possessed. Well, Scotty thinks it's all poppycock, but's convinced to follow her anyway and reluctantly undergoes such detective work. And we get this wonderful driving tour of San Francisco.
Yeah.
Where she buys flowers, she visits the grave of Carlotta Valdez, she goes to an art museum. And that Carlotta Valdez bit becomes important. It seems that Carlotta Valdez was the mistress of a wealthy man. She was doted on until she was thrown away and eventually committed suicide. We then find out from this college friend that Carlotta was the great-grandmother of Madeline. But even Madeline doesn't know this. And we begin to connect the dots as audience members that Madeline might actually be possessed. That it might be one of those types of suspense movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next day, when she attempts to suicide by jumping into the bay and is rescued by Scotty, we buy in. It's like, okay, this is how's this going to keep going? Scotty takes Madeline to his home, let her rest, let her warm up. And I lost my spot. There we go. They strike up the beginnings of a conversation, but when the phone rings, she leaves. Scotty has a job to do. His job is to follow Madeline. So the next day, he follows her. She takes him on another long driving tour of the city. Man, does that scene go on a while. Also, don't know if you noticed, but you get repeats of cars over and over again. Like, he's driving a DeSoto. There's like two or three of them in the scenes as he's driving along that, like, he'll pass and then they'll pass. It just adds to this confusion.
Okay.
And I think she's driving a Jaguar.
Yeah.
And we don't see any others of those, but we do see other, like, similar color car, you know, kind of thing. Anyway, after all this driving around the city, he ends up back at his own house. Madeline drove back to his house in order to give him a thank you card for, you know, saving her life. They end up spending the day together with Scotty gradually falling in love with her because it's a movie from the 50s. It only takes a day. Mm-hmm. Madeline tells Scotty of a nightmare that she had, and Scotty recognizes it as a mission south of town, the place tied to Carlotta. They get there, and Madeline expresses her love for Scotty, but then runs into the mission, up the bell tower, and while Scotty has an attack of this acrophobia, this vertigo, Madeline jumps off the bell tower to her death. This is an hour and 15 minutes into the movie. Mm-hmm. Scotty, after an inquest, claims that he could be considered at fault for not saving her. It's really the result of his diagnosis that Madeline's dead. And so he's kind of absolved of responsibility. Her death will be called a suicide. And then he has a breakdown where he ends up in a sanatorium completely catatonic. And when he finally gets out, he frequents the places Madeline went. And he imagines seeing her in a lot of these places. You know, he notices the car that's been sold to this other woman. One woman in particular stands out to him. And he stalks this woman to her apartment, where she introduces herself as Judy Barton from Salina, Kansas. And I'm using the word stalking there appropriately.
Yes, yes, you are.
Oh, it's creepy as shit. After finally proving that she is Judy, that she is not Madeline, Scotty asks to make it up to her by taking her to dinner. She agrees, and when he leaves, we get a flashback that Judy actually is the Madeline that he was following around. It was in disguise, and she was involved in a complex murder scheme. But she chooses to go all in on her feelings for Scotty. And she stays with him despite knowing that she should leave. You know, Scotty, for his part, goes, what's the technical term? Cuckoo bananas?
Yes, yes.
Cuckoo bananas crazy and controlling and pressures Judy across the board to change her clothes, her hair, her shoes, and so forth until she becomes the spitting image of Madeline. Which is not hard, because they're the same person.
Yep.
Played by Kim Novak. Before going to dinner one night, Scotty notices that Judy has put on a necklace that Madeline wore, and he finally connects the dots. This person actually was there and was part of the murder, or part of the suicide. And so he drives her back to the mission to reenact that night that Madeline died, ostensibly so he can get free of his past. He conquers his acrophobia. He gets the whole story from Judy, how she was paid by the college buddy to impersonate the wife, to take advantage of Scotty's fear of heights, to fake the suicide. And as the two of them begin to reconcile, a shadowy figure emerges from the shadows in the bell tower, frightening Judy such that she falls out the bell tower to her own death. The shadowy figure, who turns out to be a nun, tolls the bell as Scotty, having conquered his vertigo, looks on in disbelief. Credits.
Yeah.
So a couple of things. things that I noticed, and then I want to get your impression of them. The use of light in this is all over the place. Mm-hmm. Using colors, but also soft focus and changing colors. like when things become important or when certain things are happening on screen. So the, for example, when Scotty is learning about the history of Carlotta Valdez, the scene gets very dark. You know, it just starts turning bluish and then darker and darker until he steps outside, and then it's right back to being bright.
Yep.
You know, or the first time Scotty sees Judy kitted out exactly like Madeline was, there's like this real soft green glow kind of thing, supposedly by the neon lights that are behind him. But and then when he's having his nightmares and so forth, there's also that use of color. Not nearly so fast to be seizure-inducing, but definitely fast.
Yes.
The other bit, and this one is surprising to those of us who watch old movies, the villain is not punished. Because the villain is the college buddy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He's the one who killed his wife, who then arranged the whole cover-up, etc. and so forth. To the tune that rumor has, and it's just rumor, that Hitchcock was required to film an extra scene at the very end in which Scotty and Midge, his ex-fiancée, are listening to a radio broadcast of police are searching for the husband. It was never used. Because Hitchcock's dark.
Yeah.
So talk to me. Talk to me, Goose.
Okay.
Well,
so
it's a long movie.
It is.
I apologize for the long moviness of
it. No. Don't do that. It was like I said, it was a good movie. Hitchcock certainly knows how to make a film.
Mm, yes, that's true.
My uncomfortableness with it started in the last 45 minutes when he meets Judy. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And starts, well, wear this. Well, would you wear this? Would you change your hair to this? And
pardon for me.
Pardon the bad Jimmy Stewart impression. Yeah, for me.
Your Wiley burp could use some help.
Yeah. that is when I'm like, oh man, because we're dealing with a possible ghost story. Okay. Now she's dead. Okay, now we're dealing with somebody dealing with that grief kind of story. And oh my God, he's stalking a woman. Oh, good Lord. He's changing this woman to be the person he wants her to be in a very... Well, that in itself is not healthy. This goes beyond not healthy.
Oh, yeah. This is one of those movies where you watch and recognize, okay... You just chant in your head, it was the 50s, it was the 50s, it was the 50s. They should have known better, but they didn't.
They should have known better, yes. And so that last chunk of the movie is just uncomfortable to watch. Well shot, well acted, well written. Uncomfortable. Whether that was Hitchcock's intent or not, I don't know. But it made me feel slimy.
I get the impression that that's exactly how it's supposed. I think that, actually, so strike what I was about to say that none of you got to hear. I think that that was the purpose of the flashback. You know, we get the uncomfortable stalking thing where he encounters Judy and follows her to her apartment, that bit.
Yeah.
And that's really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And she proves that she's Judy, that she's not Madeline. And I think that if we didn't get the scene where we see that she is part of the murder, you know, the murder and so forth, I think it would ramp up the discomfort 10 times. But I think Hitchcock is saying, look, things are about to get bad, but she kind of deserves it.
Yes.
You say that for what you will. Yeah. Hitchcock famously did not like his female actresses.
I was thinking that as well.
There was a point where Kim Novak apparently asked Hitchcock, "Well, what's my motivation for doing this?" And he said to her, "Kim dear, let's not worry about motivation. It's not that serious." Like, she's a professional, dude. Have some respect.
Damn.
But I think we're supposed to get this sense that, no. This is fine. She's been part of torturing this guy for the last, you know, week and a half, 2 weeks, and then through the sanatorium, so on and so forth. So this is her getting her comeuppance.
Whether it's quote-unquote right or justifiable or not, Scotty's actions are still pretty creepy.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Scotty's actions are creepy, but we as the audience who knows the whole story are given the opportunity to not care.
True.
Now, you and I, being 21st century, you know, men who have a reasonably broad, you know, understanding of feminism, know that it's not okay.
Yes.
And I'm not going to defend that it is.
No.
It's not okay. As an audience member, we're given the opportunity to say, yeah, that's not okay, and she deserves it.
Yeah. You can be of both minds. Like, this person did a really bad thing, and they deserve what's coming to them. However,
yeesh. Man, wouldn't this all have just been better if he'd said, yeah, I can't get this other woman out of my mind. Can you dress up as her so maybe that'll fix it? And if it doesn't, I'm going to leave. Then again, by that point, he was possessed by the ghost of Madeline himself. Yeah. So,
I mean, if Judy had just moved back to Salina, Kansas, everything would have been.
Yeah. Really makes me want to look up if that's actually the name of the town, because it's spelled Salina.
Oh, there is, I believe there is a, I may be wrong, but I think there is a Salina, Kansas, and it looks like Salina. Okay. Yeah. The other thing in the realm of non-creepy, the other thing that irked me about this movie was Midge, the ex-fiance. Her presence was just superficial. Mm-hmm. There was no point to it. And the only thing I could think of is he used her to figure out where to go to find out the story of Carlotta Valdez. But that could have been done by anybody else, an old buddy from the precinct or whatever.
I got the impression that, well, one, I think Midge's part was probably bigger in the book. Like, this is based on like a French novel. And it's just one of those things that sticks around because you've got two or three scenes that need an extra person. Mm-hmm. May as well use this character.
Yeah.
Because that's where we get the exposition. Midge is there for the exposition dumps.
You know, true.
Why is he retiring from the police force? We're going to have a long conversation about exactly that. You know, who is this person that he's following and why is that? We're going to get a scene where that's explained again. You know, who's Carlotta again? A couple of things that don't add up in that, but for the most part, you know, it.
I mean, and she's clearly jealous of his involvement / relationship with Madeline.
Mm-hmm.
And it veers into creepy territory when, while at the sanatorium, she's visiting him and says something to the effect of, mommy's here, or mommy will be, you know, something like, whoa.
Yeah.
But then we don't ever see her again.
Nope. She pretty well disappears.
Yeah. Once he gets out of the sanatorium and then he goes down his dark path, we never see Midge again. And it's just like, a lot of that stuff could have been cut out and I could have gone to bed earlier. Again, not that I dislike the movie. Just, it felt padded.
There, yeah, I think that's the right word for it too. That there are scenes that's like, this could have been done differently and much more concisely. I think the issue, and Hitchcock was good at this, is the timing.
Mm-hmm.
We need to feel that this is a slow burn.
Oh, yeah.
And the scenes with Midge increase that timing.
Yeah.
You know, they add the delays to everything. But they're delays with snappy repartee and delays with pretty good, you know, on-screen chemistry.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so I agree with you. They feel superfluous when reflecting on the movie. As I'm watching the movie, I don't feel that way. But as you say it, and I'm thinking, huh, yeah, yeah, oh, yeah.
About halfway through the movie, I started to feel that way about Midge.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, oh, and then I, you know, kind of thinking back, I was like, yeah, that was not needed. But whatever.
There was more than a few times when that could have been addressed.
Yes.
But such as it is, I can't fix it, and I don't think anybody should remake it.
Oh, no. No.
This was the last time that Hitchcock worked with Jimmy Stewart. The movie was a failure at the box office, and the big criticism was that Jimmy Stewart, who at the time was like 49 years old or something, and Kim Novak was 24. And it was creepy to have a romantic lead that was twice the age of the leading lady.
Yes, that was the creepy part of the movie.
Yep.
Yes, that right there.
That right there.
Nothing else to see here, folks. Just look at the age gap.
Look at the age gap and all the white people. In 1950 San Francisco, clearly, is a one race town.
Yep.
My goodness. Well, in terms of some fun trivia, almost all of the restaurants that are shown, Ernie's especially, actually existed.
Oh, nice.
And Ernie's existed until 1999 when it closed its doors.
Interesting.
The Golden Gate Bridge, it turns out, is actually there. It's not just a matte painting.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. You know that scene in the opening of Full House when they drive their car across it?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they just reused that same bridge from Vertigo.
Okay.
Cool, huh?
Yeah.
Welcome to You Want Me to Watch What? Home of Useless Trivia. I think that Jimmy Stewart actually was well-placed in this because we need him to be really likable for the first first 2.5 acts of the movie.
Yeah.
And it makes his turn in that third act that much more, I don't know if terrifying is the right word, but uncomfortable certainly.
Absolutely,
is.
Yes.
You know, and this is from a couple of guys who really know Jimmy Stewart from Rear Window, probably, and It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, I didn't watch a whole lot of Jimmy Stewart movies. And American Tale, Five Will Goes West.
That's pretty much it. A Wonderful Life and American Tale 2, Five Will Goes West. That's about it.
But he's one of those, it's kind of like putting Tom Hanks in a movie. You know, it's your quintessential good guy. Mm-hmm. And what happens when the good guy goes creepy, it's really bad.
Yeah. Robin Williams did a movie like that where he was...
1 hour
yeah,
photo?
Yeah, 1 hour photo. You take somebody who's, you know, habitually appears to be a nice, funny person and put them in a dark, dark character. It's rough. Good.
Yeah.
But rough.
Yeah. So, now we could talk about all manner of things. I mean, the Hitchcock, he knows how to do lighting. He knows how to set up a camera shot. He does show up in his own films. In this case, he walks across the screen at the shipyard early on in the movie. Carrying what looks like to be a case that would hold like a plague doctor mask. So, his characters work on a surface level but we don't get a whole lot of deeper motivations for any of them.
No.
He is famously said in terms of this movie that the lighting was more important than the script.
Interesting.
And to give you an idea on that, the first time that we see Madeline at the art museum staring at the painting of Carlotta, mm-hmm. that scene took a week.
What?
It took a week of her sitting in the museum looking at a painting because Hitchcock wanted to make sure that the lighting was absolutely perfect for the scene.
Okay.
I don't know how it could have been wrong, but it certainly was right, I guess. So.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. You know, it's just one of those things. One of those things. It's like when you find out that, like, Kubrick had, you know, hundreds of takes of a single scene that, you know, or a single line or something. It's just, eventually you find somebody who's an artist.
Yes.
You know, you don't get those kind of stories with Tropic Thunder.
I'm still trying to block that one, man.
Sorry. Well, at the end of the day, what do you think? Recommend?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Especially in terms of how a film is made. It's got a lot of good qualities in that aspect. The story itself is good. Just be prepared. It get dark.
The story is dark. The movie is well done. I'm also a recommend. It's not one that you need to see over and over again, though.
No.
This is one. I'm glad I watched it again. I think this makes the third time that I've seen the movie. And I'll probably watch it maybe one or two more times in my life. Just it's affecting enough that you don't need to pop it in over and over again.
Yeah.
You know,
if it comes so. Like in a Hitchcock collection, you're not going to be disappointed in it, but you're not going to pull it off all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, cool. I'm glad that we found one that was challenging and likable and also creepy as shit.
Yes.
So that makes it your turn.
Okay. I've got something in mind.